Technorama episode 738. No joke. That'd be a good band name. No joke. No joke. Playing tonight. No joke.
Yeah. I always thought free beer was the right. Best title for a band. We really get everybody out.
And you wouldn't get booked anywhere, though. The bar would say, I'm not putting that on my sign.
Yeah.
Hey, welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If you are joining us for the first time, welcome to the show. If you're returning, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. My name is Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona. It's sunny now. It was raining earlier. Happy Easter, everyone. We're recording this on March 31st to be released on April 3rd, which is why the history segment is always on a Wednesday. See how that works?
Hey, and that's also why the title says no joke, because it's not on the first.
Right over there. Oh, because it's no April Fool's joke. Right over there making the jokes is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing good. Doing really good. I had a good, we're recording this on Easter. Had a good Easter day. How about you?
Wonderful. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Did the live streaming, had a nap, ate a bunch of candy.
That's what I missed doing today, was a nap.
We had a mysterious basket full of candy, chocolates and whatnot show up on our doorstep when we got back from church. Like, the Easter Bunny came, the Easter Bunny came.
Yeah.
First thing you do, check the Wise Cam.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Nope. No furry rabbit hopping around our neighborhood.
Hey, what would you think if you did see a rabbit came and put that basket and hopped off?
Kudos to you, cosplayer. Kudos to you.
Oh, that reminds me. I need to look this up on my YouTube channel. I know I've talked about this before. Yes. On my YouTube channel, I made for my son a video of the Easter Bunny bringing his basket.
I remember
after
that.
He went to bed. Yeah. He wanted to capture him on camera. I said, "Oh, we can do that." So I set up the tripod, had him help me do all that. And when he went to bed, you know, I had some rubber bunny ears, and I flipped in front of the camera and I edited it where the basket just appears. Well, what's funny is it gets a ton of views this time of year. So I gotta go here and look in a minute and see if I can find it real quick. But that was,
did you do the sequel for Santa Claus?
No, I should have. What's funny is the comments, and I should link it in the
somebody was sarcastic. Video. Were they like, "Hey, somebody got nasty on you"?
Yeah, here you go. Here's one comment. I don't believe that for a second. That's somebody's hand.
Duh.
Yeah, let's see. OMG. This is 10 years ago, man. And that was 3 years ago. I know.
This was 10 years ago. How long do you think the Easter Bunny's been around?
I know. Let's see. Analytics. Let's see real quick. It's got over 200 views in the last 28 days. I'm not sure what the overall was for this video, but yeah, that's 10 years ago. That's funny.
Well, real quick recap. Last week, we talked about a story where we were looking at, do dogs understand objects? We know they understand actions like come, sit, stay, that kind of thing.
Yep.
And then we were talking about actions. On Thursday, March 28th, Reuters picked up a story just like this. I think they got it from us. Someone at Reuters might be listening to Technorama. If you are, God bless you.
Or email us. Please call us.
Link to us. Something. Yeah. It was about the dogs. Can dogs associate words with objects? They study fine. So I put a link to this week's show notes to the same thing we had last week's show notes, but different source. So kind of fun to be one step ahead of the game sometimes. This reminds me of Hitchbot. When we were talking about Hitchbot and then he got beat up in Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah.
Right. It's like we were following that before it was a news story just because it was nerdy news.
Whatever happened to that thing?
Hitchbot never moved on from Philadelphia. We should start another one.
Bot.
We should start another one. All right.
I searched for Hitchbot and an autopsy pops up.
Autopsy, poor Hitchbot. Yeah. Oh, we get letters. We get your letters every day. Mailman, mailman, mail today.
All right, so I'm gonna tell you real quick before we start.
Yeah,
this video, a 30-second video, has gotten 115,000, almost 116,000 views.
Woohoo! Over 13 years.
Yeah, it's an overnight 10-year success. Viral.
Some people have a slow burn, Craig. Some people have a slow burn. All right, our question of the week last week was, what is your favorite terrible movie? And I think Craig has a new one.
Yes, I do. I'll talk about it in a little while.
Okay, Steve London says, he's got a Seymour link here, like he usually does. The Postman is one of my guilty pleasures. Also, the Has Fallen movies. Olympus Has Fallen, London Has Fallen, Angel Has Fallen, London Bridge Has Fallen. You could do one, L-U-N-D-I-N, London Bridge Has Fallen.
Right.
Steve, yeah. you gotta like register that domain or something. Okay, Gary Lindro says, Congo with Ernie Hudson, Laura Linney, and Tim Curry. How can you go wrong?
I vaguely remember seeing the movie come out, but I never watched it. It's like I remember seeing, like, you know, material, like a trailer or something.
Oh, you want one of these?
Yeah, I'm going to read one of these. So Mike Robinson says, Hell Comes from Frogtown.
Sounds like a title I can get behind.
Yeah. Land of the Lost. Mm. Yeah, it was a disappointment. What UHF. No, I wouldn't say that was a bad movie to begin with.
No, it just said your favorite terrible movie.
It's not a terrible movie.
UHF is a terrible movie, Craig.
It's Oscar worthy. I don't know what they're doing there.
Documentary.
Yeah. Hysterical. Michael Ironside's parts in Highlander 2. Oh, yeah.
How about Highlander, anything but the original?
I know, right? Cabin in the Woods. Yeah, I didn't care for that one. But, I mean, anyway. So, He-Man and the Masters of the Universe.
Yeah.
John Carter of Mars. I didn't think that was a terrible movie. I think it just didn't do well.
I didn't see it. I heard it was a terrible movie, so I just stayed away.
No, I don't think it was terrible at all. Evolution, the Super Mario Brothers. I assume you're talking about the one with John Leguizamo. I was trying to think of the. Anyway,
I want to see like a Super Mario Brothers made by Quentin Tarantino.
Oh my God. That would be interesting.
It would just be a dark movie.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, I'm sorry. I lost my place. And David Lynch's Dune and Twin Peaks, Fire Walk With Me. I didn't think Dune was a terrible movie. Well, I don't know. I think I may like the new one better.
John Kratzer says Starship Troopers. Amen, brother. Hey, you know what? You get a Mario coin for that one, too. And Spaceballs. Spaceballs was a comedy. I don't know if I would call that a terrible movie. I think
I wouldn't call it a terrible movie. It's a comedy spoof on Star Wars. Right. So everything is, I mean, it's, how and can you?
Anyway. Steve London replied back. He said, if you think Starship Troopers is a terrible movie, then you haven't understood it. It's a brilliant movie.
I didn't care for it. Maybe I need to give it another shot. Right, but
a couple of shares out here. Did you get any comments on your share?
Let me see. Why? No.
Okay. Neither did Mike. So thank you for sharing anyway.
Yeah.
I forgot. So I'm even worse than that. I'm like a negative one on that. All right. Cool, everybody. Thank you. Oh, what was your new favorite movie, Craig?
I'm going to talk about it later. So,
Okay.
Yeah, okay. It's going to be in the Pass the Remote section.
I'm just throwing Monty Python and the Holy Grail and Napoleon
Dynamite. That's not a terrible movie.
Some people would consider it a terrible movie.
Oh, I know some people do.
Like, it's terrible in terms of special effects are terrible.
It doesn't matter.
The set design is terrible. I mean, there's terrible aspects.
People are not enlightened. They don't know.
Yeah, that's a documentary.
No, Idiocracy is a documentary.
Okay. All right. We'll talk about it later. So that means we play out the fan mail. Another letter from our listener, Dave. Mike says, put a link to your video. I want to see it. I want to see the bunny.
Oh, I will. I'll do that.
Okay. Well, you don't actually see the bunny. You just see his ears. Whoop, not that
don't
song.
Give it away.
This song. On this day in history, for April 3rd, 2024. That's like what golfers would say. It's the 94th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 272 days remaining in 2024. It was on this date in 1860 that the first successful United States Pony Express run from St. Joseph, Missouri to Sacramento, California began. I like that. First successful. How many did they send out from St. Joe that didn't work?
32.
Pony Express, right, 100... take 33.
Yeah, let's try this again. All right. Bob, come on.
Good luck, Carl.
Yeah. 139 years ago today, Gottlieb Daimler was granted a German patent for a light, high-speed, four-stroke engine, which he used 7 months later to create the world's first motorcycle, the Daimler White Wagon.
Reitwagen.
Reitwagen.
I want to drive the motorcycle. The Reitwagen. Never heard of that one. We all know Daimler from... Anyway, let's keep
Cars.
Going. Yes.
Chrysler.
On April 3rd, 1933, it was the first flight over Mount Everest, the British Houston Mount Everest Flight Expedition. That rolls off the tongue. Yeah. But led by the Marquis of Clydesdale and funded by Lucy, Lady Houston.
And it was on that same date in 1973 that Martin Cooper of Motorola made the first handheld mobile phone to call to Joel S. Engel of Bell Labs.
Watson, come here. I need you.
Joel, get in here.
It just doesn't have the same effect, does it? Well, yeah. Bell was in there on both stories. It was on this date in 1975 that Bobby Fischer refused to play a chess match against Anatoly Karpov, giving Karpov the title of world champion by default.
By default. It was also on that date in 1981 that the Osborne 1, the first successful portable computer, portable in quotes, was unveiled at the West Coast Computer Fair in San Francisco.
Well, the Russians made a portable computer that was larger than that. Yeah. It was 28 years ago today that suspected Unabomber Theodore Kaczynski was captured at his Montana cabin in the United States. Well, I'm glad his Montana cabin wasn't in Siberia.
Right? And it was also on that date in 2000 in the court case of United States versus Microsoft Corp. Microsoft was ruled to have violated United States antitrust laws by keeping an oppressive thumb on its competitors.
I keep an oppressive thumb on my space bar. On April 3rd, 2010, Apple released the first generation iPad, a tablet computer. Everybody suspected that would fail miserably, and yet I have two on my desk right now.
He's keeping his thumbs on those as well.
That's right. Well, you have to use the thumb to unlock them. Happy birthday goes out on this date to German mathematician and astronomer Michael Neander. No relation to the Neanderthal. He was born on this date in 1529.
And William Watson, English physician, physicist, and botanist, was born on that same date in 1715.
Pierre Bretonneau. The French doctor who performed the first successful tracheotomy. Oh, I would hate to be that guy that got the tracheotomy. I can't breathe. I can fix this.
Give me that ballpoint pen.
They didn't have ballpoint pens 246 years ago.
No. Give me that fountain pen, quick.
Moving on.
Sorry, cranking myself up.
See that stick that beaver chewed on over there? Get that.
Give me that straw from McDonald's. They didn't have those 246 years ago.
Did someone call the McDonald clan? Hey.
All right. Game face.
Also born
on that same date in 1798, American admiral, geographer, and explorer Charles Wilkes.
Bud Fisher, the American cartoonist, was born 139 years ago today.
An American publisher, co-founded Time Magazine. Henry Luce was born 126 years ago today.
His name's not Henry Time. Maybe that was his married name.
Yeah.
Born April 3rd, 1909, Polish-American mathematician and academic Stanisław Ulam.
An American colonel, pilot, and astronaut, an all-around good guy. Gus Grissom was born 98 years ago today.
Are all American colonels, pilots, and astronauts all-around good guys?
I don't know. Maybe.
Bangladeshi engineer and architect, the person who co-designed the Willis Tower, formerly the Sears Tower, and John Hancock Center in Chicago, Illinois, Fazlur Rahman Khan was born on this date in 1929. Did not know that he did both buildings, although they're very kind of similar in style. They're both tall and brown.
Yeah, right. And last but not least, American actor and comedian Eddie Murphy is 63 today.
I can't do my Eddie Murphy laugh anymore, apparently. Listener birthdays this... Oh, man, we got a ton of them. Three of them on April 4th. 404. Brian K., Joel McLaughlin, and Amy Bowen. On the 5th, we have four birthdays. We have three on the 4th, four on the 5th. This is getting to be a pattern. Chad Davis, John Isler. Hey, wait a minute, that's five. Griffin Sylvester, Yorga's mom, Martine, Ringmaster Greg from Dancing with Elephants. Oh, the music's going. I got to get through this quick. On the 6th, we have two more. Trevor Latecki, Samwise Gamgee. How do you get in here? And PC Herring on the 7th. That's the way it was on this day in history for April 3rd, 2024. And if you want to get your name on the birthday calendar, Craig's going to put up a banner for the people that are watching at home. You can go over to chuckchat.com/birthday and we'll give you a shout out. Happy birthday, Samwise. Was he born in like the third age of Middle Earth or something?
He's like 3,000 years old
now. What's that translate into the Gregorian calendar? April 6th, I guess. All right, let's get into the news.
Wait a minute.
Yes? What are you talking about, Willis Building? What are you talking about, Willis Building?
Oh, by the way, here you go. Let's catch up on a few comments.
Now it's Apple's turn to face the DOJ. Everything gets a turn.
Yeah, here you go. He said...
portable compared to a mainframe.
The Osborne. Yeah.
I told you, it's relative.
Yeah.
All things are relative, and all my relatives have my things. There's some law that Einstein made, something like that, I'm sure. All right. The latest mission to the space station, the International Space Station, there was actually somebody who was not formally trained as an astronaut or pilot.
That's pretty amazing.
The latest Russian Soyuz rocket that went up carried astronaut Tracy Deissman, cosmonaut Oleg Novitsky, and Belarusian flight attendant. Yes, that's someone who takes care of you on the airplane, Marina Valevskaya. I hope I said that relatively close.
Sounds good.
She won the trip as part of a national science contest. And she didn't make a volcano out of baking soda and vinegar.
That's what I would have done.
That's why you're not on the ISS.
Yeah. Go straight to the volcano.
So this is cool. She went up with the latest crew that's going to replace the crew that's there. And then she'll come back with them on Saturday, April 6th. But they said, hey, she was already well-trained in how to take care of people. That's going to be her mission for the next 11 days, whatever she's up there for. How to stay calm in emergency situations. So why not? She seemed like there were 3,000 people that applied for this and she got picked. So that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
That came to us from futurism.com.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
In other news, of course, all our geek friends are aware that April 8th is the total solar eclipse across the United States. First one since August 21st, 2017. I think I was counting down the days since the last one, but I will not be seeing this one. No, I cannot take time to go halfway across the country to observe a solar eclipse when I just saw one recently. And yeah. You know, this one would be far more costly because I'm not staying in my sister-in-law's backyard.
Well, I do have a friend that lives in the path. I probably should have gone to his place, but
it's the wrong time of year for us.
Yeah, it's a little close to a big event at work, and so I don't know if I can. And it's on a Monday, so the eclipse.
Yep.
I think we talked about that. We should just reschedule it.
So reschedule the eclipse?
That's right.
It'd probably be easier to reschedule the event, but maybe not.
Wait a minute. I think this is the same conversation we had last time.
Probably. Well, anyway, NASA is going to be studying this from... way up in the atmosphere. They got a couple things. They've got the solar probe that's going around, but it's not going to be quite in the optimal position. Because what they're looking at is solar maximum, when you get the most sunspots and solar flares and coronal mass ejections, they're hoping to catch some of those because this is a total solar eclipse. When you get to observe the sun's corona, which is like the sun's atmosphere on a hot day, not sure how that happens, but they have a plane called the WB-57, which they had in 2017, and they did some initial, no, I'm sorry, this came out in 2019. So they're going to fly this plane at like 60,000 feet. What is that? Just shy of 20,000 meters. We'll call it 18,000 just to be roughly fair. And, way up above all the clouds and reducing the atmosphere. They're going to be following this thing. Now, obviously you can't follow it in real time. You can't stay in the shadow the whole time because it pretty much traverses from the border of Texas to the border of Maine in just over an hour. You can't fly that fast.
I'm sorry. No, you have to be in the, you have to calculate a place to.
The SR-71 might make it, but that's not, that's a spy plane. And
well, even when we were observing it, the last one, when you're watching, you see it really for just a moment. And then as soon as it gets dark, then it starts getting light.
Well, it's surprising how long it stays dark. And we were out on...
It was surprising how long it was dark, but at the same time, it's surprising how long it wasn't.
I mean, it's like a minute and a half for us or so. It was a couple of minutes where the sun was completely covered up and you could see the shadow. We were sort of on this flat plain in Wyoming with mountains in the distance. And you could see the shadow coming. It was really kind of creepy. Like, oh, the mountains got dark. Oh, the plane is getting dark. And then now we're in the dark.
Yeah.
And all the birds, stopped tweeting.
Oh, yeah. Well, we had, there were some chickens near us and you could hear them get quiet.
Yeah.
Because it was like, oh, it's time for bed.
And then you see this sun coming back from the mountains are lit up. Now the plane is lit up. Now we're lit up. It was really kind of cool. Mm-hmm. So, I hope everybody, I mean, it is hitting some major, major cities this time. Dallas, Texas, Carbondale, Illinois, Little Rock, Arkansas, Cleveland, Ohio, Buffalo, New York, Burlington, Vermont, and Caribou, Maine are all pretty much in the path of totality. We're in that 60 to 70% range. So,
you're going to see a little something?
We'll see some crescent. Yeah, you are closer to the 80% line. 70 to 80%. Looking at the map on the article here.
Yeah.
So, take out your, your pinhole cardboard and look at the ground or watch the shadows that the trees make. You see lots of little crescents.
So it'll be around 2 o'clock my time.
You will see it. Yeah. Probably closer to 3.
Yeah.
Just before 3 PM Eastern time is when you'll get it.
All right.
Because Little Rock will be seeing it at 1:52 PM CDT. And you're just about at the same latitude as
that's about as best I'm going to be able to do. Last time,
hope it's not going to rain.
Last time was great. I was able to go right to a spot where, I was at family's house down in Columbia.
That's cool.
We made an event of it. It was kind of a lot of family was there, and we all saw it. I got some embarrassing pictures of my dad with the glasses on.
So if you cross this one with the other one, there's got to be someplace where people like in Southern Illinois hit two of them. Although it was cloudy in Southern Illinois, because I remember Dr. Pamela Gay was really bummed the last time. She goes, I hope we get to see it this time.
Well, that's even that kind of, isn't that kind of the risk you take even planning on being somewhere, to see it? You got to make sure the weather's going to be right.
I'm going to watch webcams.
Oh, I'm just saying that's kind of the risk that you take if you were planning on a trip. Making sure the weather is going to be decent.
Well, right, because you would have had to book your hotel or campground or something months and months ago.
Oh, yeah.
Mike Robinson says, what happens if the solar eclipse happens at the same time it's hit with a solar flare?
The moon will blow up.
You will see a big flame, a plume in the corona. That would be cool. I want to see if the disk of the moon is covering the sun just right and they get this monstrous coronal mass ejection. That would be cool.
Is when you get that diamond ring Yeah, where it's a little bit light on everything, and then you see it come out. It'd be awesome.
Yes, it's called the diamond ring.
No, I mean a flare. You'd be seeing a flare, yeah.
Ooh.
At that time, that'd be awesome.
I remember seeing the diamond ring and Bailey's beads. That's very rare. Okay, let's move on. We have another story about the robotic fish revolution.
Yes.
This is scary. Like the government is using robotic insects and birds to observe you. Now they're using robotic fish.
I now welcome our new robotic fish overlords.
I salute you, pescatarians. Wow, this gives fish and chips a whole new meaning.
Mm.
Didn't see that one coming, did you?
Oh.
Neither did I.
Oh, that was a good one.
Okay. Well, thank you. So the idea is that scientists have been using remote operated vehicles, or ROVs, for quite some time. And when they send these down, they're not exactly camouflage in the environment. Right. So when you go take a look at a squid or something, or you're going, hey, look at me, I'm not a fish.
The squid's like, hey, something's fishy here.
Yeah. What are you? I'm going to hide. Well, now they've got robotic fish that move the tail back and forth, you know, side to side. And many of them are not really naturally colored. Some are, but some aren't. And the idea is this will, you know, blend in. You know, psst, hey, let's go incognito, robots. So the issue is that they don't have quite the battery life of ROVs. So you can't really drop one of these in the water and say, let's go to the Titanic. It's not going to last that long. Maybe a couple hours, two hours.
Yeah, they're tiny. How big of a battery can you put in there?
Right. Without sinking the darn thing, because batteries are heavy. But I really hope they do some testing on this in a controlled environment before they let them loose into the wild.
Mm-hmm.
Because sharks have electrical sensors on their snouts called ampullae Lorenzini, which pick up the electrical fields of other fish.
Yeah.
What if they pick this thing up and go, whoa, what was that? You know, or...
Hey, wait a minute. You reminded me of what's that movie with Chevy Chase in it? The
National Vacation? Modern Problems.
Modern Problems. He snorts the coke off the floor.
Yeah.
Oh!
I can just see a shark doing that.
Wow.
And then the shark goes and eats this fish, and now you have sharks with freaking lasers. Okay, that's how they came about. So they need to do some testing. Start in a fish tank with some goldfish and see if the goldfish are aware that it's there. Start it in a small tank with a shark and go, hey, shark, don't eat this. Okay. Although some sharks, like great whites, will eat anything, as we found. Just watch Jaws. Great documentary. License plates, the whole thing.
Documentary. This is pretty cool, though. I've seen some of these videos around where they're actually swimming, and they look... Some of these look natural. The ones at the top look like little toys.
I'll start an aquarium like this. You won't have to worry about them dying.
Yeah.
Well, they were talking about the charging, too. They said, if we had an underwater charging station, possibly wave-powered, so you get this wave generator up there, then you put a chi charger, a giant chi charger, the fish comes back, sits on the chi charger for a while. Again, how the other fish aren't going to detect this, I don't know.
What's Charlie doing? I don't know. He's just hanging on that little pad.
Cool pad. Looks like a fake anemone, but whatever.
Yeah. They need to make it look like an anemone.
Kind of like we make cell towers try to look like palm trees.
I know. It always gets me. You see trees and like, you know, 20 feet over it is one of those fake ones.
World's worst Christmas tree. Oh, it's a cell phone tower. So, yeah, do some testing, please. Make sure that you're not going to harm the environment that you're trying to observe and protect. That's all I gotta ask.
I'm still amazed that you reminded me of the movie Modern Problems.
Mike Robinson says cocaine shark versus cocaine bear. There we go. That's probably a closer analogy to it.
Oh, no. Well, at least the shark, you can sit on the beach and not be a problem.
have a big robot shark. Oh, wait, we already had one of those. He said, Mike said the first prototype was Bruce from Jaws.
Right.
Yep. All it takes is a scuba tank and a rifle. All right, moving right along. Oh, it's time for the shout out to the chat room. We got Clinton and Mike. We're hanging around. Well, apparently there's more people out there watching. Craig, we've got like got 9 people.
We're going viral.
What did we do? Maybe Reuters did link to us. I don't know. I can't explain it. Say hi, people. Just, you don't even have to make a funny comment. Unless it's a bunch of robotic fish that are watching us now.
Yeah.
We welcome our robotic pescatarian overlords. Pescatarian. No, that's the people who eat the fish. What was it? A pescatarian is a person who only eats fish, who eat other fish?
That was on the Silicon Valley.
What do you do if you eat a fish that eats robot fish?
Well, on Silicon Valley, all these Silicon Valley types were all explaining their diet to the waiter. I only eat this kind. The guy said, I'm a pescatarian. I only eat fish that eat other fish.
I've probably said this, and I apologize if I'm turning into my dad and repeating stories for the nth time.
Oh,
great news, okay. Everyone.
Whoops, I bumped the iPad.
You do that, Chuck. It's okay.
I do that. So I told you my favorite line when I go to a restaurant and they say, do you have any allergies? I say, yes, I'm allergic to cats, but I don't see them on the menu, so we're good. the lady at the Chinese restaurant did not laugh.
I wonder why.
And then, of course, if they ask, do you have reservations? I say, yes, I do, but I came here anyway. Where's
Yeah.
I was actually aiming for this one, but missed.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Stick around. We're here till the internet goes down. I don't know. Which is not far from now. Speaking of internet going down, hey, join us Sundays at 8:30 p.m. on Sundays. Sundays at 8:30 p.m. on Sundays. That works. It's double redundant. Put it on your calendar twice if you have to. Facebook and YouTube, join us. Hang out like some of these other people. We're up to 10. We just increased our viewership by 10%. How many other podcasts can say that every night?
Don't ask. Don't ask that question.
Let's keep this trend going. Keep sharing, like, and subscribe, whatever else you got to do to keep this nonsense going. Thank you, everybody, for hanging out with us. It's a lot of fun. 11! Yeah. Woohoo! I think someone's just using their incognito mode at this point.
Right.
It's sympathy votes, people. Okay, now we go into the part of this podcast that we call Remember When, where we take a look back into the days of yesteryear.
Yeah. Here we go.
And we don't get spotted on YouTube for using that music that, I don't know.
I know. It was,
sometimes it does.
Yeah, we got it free and clear. I don't know why they do that.
Yeah, whatever.
All right.
Pastafarian, Mike says. He's a Pastafarian. I actually mentioned Pastafarians in Podcasting for Dummies.
You did?
Yes. I need an example of a podcast. So I said, you know, let's say you mix up linguine or angel hair and vermicelli on your podcast and you want to go fix it so you can use Descript to like correct the script and generate new audio for you. You don't have to do a pickup or re-record that word. And now all the Pastafarians will not send you hate mail.
Somebody's going to go, okay.
I come up with, that's half my job, people, is just come up with stories with demos. And that was it. Use cases. All right. This story goes back. It's from The Verge, and it talks about, you know, how people are like, wow, ChatGPT is the greatest thing since sliced bread. It takes a look way back, almost 60 years, to the days of Eliza. Eliza came out in 1966. And people back then were equally stunned. What was the guy's name who came up with Eliza? Jackson, Johnson, Anderson?
Joseph Weizenbaum.
I was close. Weizenbaum is close to that.
Yeah, that was really close.
Joseph, right. Good old guy. Yeah. Joseph Weizenbaum built Eliza, and people thought it was real, and it was really simplistic, especially by today's standards. Mm-hmm. In some cases, it wouldn't know what you said, so it would just repeat your words back to you.
Right.
But instead of saying, I think blah, 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 it says, oh, you think blah, blah, blah. It almost like a counselor. It almost sounds like Deanna Troi sometimes.
Yeah. I remember the first time I ran across it.
I was amazed.
It was on my Commodore. Somebody had a copy of it, and I put it on there and ran it, and I was like, wow, it's like asking me questions. It kind of fools you into feeling like it's having a conversation with you.
I had one on an Apple, and we had a sound card in there, too, so it could say the sentences. Like, ooh.
Now, oh, there you go.
We were way in the future. So there's a video in here called Rise of the Chatbot in the articles. If you go over to the show notes for episode 738, ding, over at Technorama, chuckchat.com/Technorama is a better place to go. Or if you just Google Technorama podcast, you'll find it. Show 738. Yep. A lot of cool stuff in here. A lot of history about chatbots and AI. And you know, it goes back further than just late 2022, people.
You know, I can't remember if I told you or said this on the show, but I'll say it anyway. I was at work and I was in a meeting, and we had been not struggling, but working out the ins and outs of setting up Gen AI for our product so we can deliver some training. And I said, good news, everybody. I got the answer to our
AI. Good news, nobodies.
I got the solution to our Gen AI, and I said, we're going to use Eliza. And it was crickets. Nobody knew what it was.
You are an old man.
Yeah. I was like, oh, dang it.
He's talking to a bunch of 20-somethings. Yeah. Who's she? Is that like Alice?
Right.
Oh, my. Well, not quite 60 years ago, but 20 years ago, April 1st, 2024 is the 20th anniversary of Gmail. And of course, being released on April 1st and making such claims as a gigabyte mailbox sounded like what was the website that had all the fun stuff on it?
The fun stuff
Geek,
on it?
ThinkGeek. ThinkGeek always had good
April that kind Fool's of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. It sounded almost like a ThinkGeek spoof. Well, you have to remember when you signed up for your ISP usually gave you an email account, but it was 15 megabytes. So when somebody says you get 1 gigabyte of mail storage, like, wow, I never have to delete anything again. Right. And the article goes on to talk about, you know, the invites. Remember, they were hard to find for the first couple of years.
They were.
We would have. Yep. I remember if you go back and listen to some old Technoramas, we've still got Gmail invites to give.
Yeah.
But the thing they did not talk about, and I was really like, dude, you missed a major feature that Gmail had going for it. Yeah. Yes, it was a nice, clean interface, and yes, there was a lot of storage. They totally missed the spam filtering.
Yeah, but when they got it right, it's pretty solid.
I remember when I used to work in IT, have to install a Bayesian spam filter on everybody's Outlook client on their computer so they could filter out. And this thing had it built in the cloud. This is the way to go. Yeah. This is just beautiful.
Well, when you had, and especially when you had other people reporting in, like the base user base of email, and you start building up a really good database, you can stop spam, I think, pretty quickly. And some gets through every here and there, but it's not terrible. If you go look in your spam folder, there's plenty of stuff it caught. So
now this guy did an interesting deep dive into his. Nowadays, Gmail doesn't get quite the love. They have a 1.2 billion user base. Now, I don't know how many of those are dead accounts. 4 or 5 of them belong to me, at least.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's an active user base. They can't make changes as aggressively as they used to because you'll upset the apple cart a little bit. So they were doing a lot of new and innovative things like, hey, we're coming out with mobile. Hey, we're going to redesign the whole UI. And they do have a screenshot of yesteryear. But they did a side-by-side. Unfortunately, on the left, it's a little slider that you can go right or left, you know, kind of like when you see disaster versus before. They have a message thread. So you see Jason said this. Kevin said, here's Kevin's reply. And then you take the slider and... Well, that's the front page index of all my messages. Like, you're comparing what's No, it's like a list versus a single record thread. Like, no, you gotta do apples for apples on this, please. Anyway, it's a fun article to read. He went through, the author went through and said, there's a lot of stuff in here I kind of forgot. He said, my parents used to send me messages. They're no longer with me, but I like to go back in here as like a time machine or a breakup letter from his girlfriend. I said, wow, Craig,
got an email?
We should do like a random Technorama message from the past. We're coming up on 20 years. Why not?
Yeah. Well, we could. Now I've had, when did you get a Gmail account? Right when,
pretty close. It was, I want to say it was late 2004, early 2005. I don't remember exactly when I got it, but I remember I had to get an invite from somebody. And I want to say it was a podcaster, but it wouldn't have been before August of 2004.
It was, was a podcaster, it was probably from me.
Could have been. You weren't a podcaster before me.
No. Well, sort of.
Well, not sort of.
I was helping Kevin Devin on his podcast. Not really. It was his show.
You
but
on the podcast. Mm-hmm. Now, when I started listening to it in September, October.
I kind of shoehorned my way in there as a helper. So I was helping a lot of podcasters.
Aren't you glad you stuck with this show? We're still around.
Yeah, I'm thrilled.
Rolling in the dough.
That's a great time. Yeah. No.
So yeah, hard to believe.
I wouldn't have it any other way.
Gmail's 20 years old.
Yeah, I was just looking. I think I had offloaded some emails early on, but my oldest one is in 2006.
As old Spock said to young Spock, you have to connect up with Chuck. It is a friendship that will define you both. Divide you both. Wow.
Spock was prophetic.
So old Craig visited young Craig and made you do the podcast thing with me.
That's what it is. Yeah.
All right. That's the Remember When section. Now we get to thank my favorite people of the podcast, the ones who donate. They went to patreon.com/HectorRamaPodcast and contributed as little as $1 a show. So cha-ching, here comes another bill. It's the end of the month. We're coming after your Patreon wallets. Alexis Duran, Amber Elstad, Amy Bowen, Abner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Brian Brown, Chris Martinez, Chris MC, Dandy Mancoyer, Dean Jensen, Denise Inglis, Gary Lindros, John Clifford, John Noble, Yorga Schrauen, blank, Kyle Nishioka, Leon, Mark Kilfoyle, Brad Miller, Mike Wills, Saturday Morning Media, Steve Weshy, Steve Cody, Steve Therian, Steve Webb. I'm almost able to do that entire series without looking now.
Wow.
Steve London and Tim Cook.
See, we need somebody to trip him up. Trip Club Chuck up.
It's easier to trip you up, apparently.
Yeah, go sign up for Patreon.
Thank you very much. They went over to patreon.com/TechnoramaPodcast. They get another show that we record right after this, but comes out before this. It's kind of weird. That's the way the podcast universe works. And just Craig and I sharing thoughts. What's been happening in our last week? Something techie, something we learned, something controversial. You never know what's going to be on there. And the occasional postcard and maybe a t-shirt at the t-shirt level. So thank you, everybody. We truly appreciate it. We forge ahead because you enable us. Oh, darn. I called them enablers.
You're enablers.
Anyway, let's go on to the pass me the remote. This is what Craig and I have been reading, watching. Besides, cute women.
Besides
at the
reading
mall.
The articles for this show.
All right. Oh, I was watching cute girls at the beach. But okay,
what?
That doesn't show up here. Don't you?
What beach? Wait a minute. What beach? It was near you.
on the cruise.
Oh, okay. Thought you were like on a webcam somewhere.
All
I don't
right.
know.
I'm going to start with the first one. I am all caught up, which means there's two episodes left of Shogun on Netflix. Great show. If you're not watching it, I encourage you to check it out. No, I'm sorry. It's on Hulu. Hulu? Yes, it's on Hulu.
Okay.
Not Netflix.
It is on Hulu. I haven't seen it, but tell me about it.
A couple of coworkers were talking about it very highly. I jumped into it about a week and a half ago and got all caught up as of the 26th of March episode. So there's two more to go. Well done. Great actors. The guy who plays not Takagawa, that's the real name. It's funny because I was looking through the history stuff last week for the 24th of March, and it says in 1603, whatever his name is, Ieshi Takagawa is named shogunate, blah, blah, blah. And I went, this sounds really familiar. Oh, this is what they based the show on. The show has different, slightly different names, like Takagana. But it's all based on truth and fact, because it says right at the beginning of the first episode, Japan, Edo, Japan, 1600. Like, oh, cool. So we're telling that story through this, but it's really well done. They really put you in that world and immerse you in the Japanese culture without, I'm watching it in Japanese with subtitles, with English subtitles. There is an option to watch it with English overdubs. I don't like that as much for most shows that I watch. I think I watch Dark that way. Mm-hmm. And it just, the voiceover actors don't emote. They don't convey that emotion of acting as well as the natural actors do.
Yeah. I know sometimes I will turn on the closed captioning to understand even what some of the English people are saying.
Well, it's we just had accessibility training mandatory at work. And they said, you might not realize it, but that was closed captioning was help for the hearing impaired. Yes. I think we're now all hearing impaired when it comes to that. Now you can catch those words.
Sometimes you'll see a guy kind of mumble a line and you go,
right,
what did he say?
Right.
And it's like something important.
Apparently everyone's laughing. So I must laugh also. All right. Yeah. What do you got?
All right. So I said last episode, I was going to do my homework, and my homework assignment was to watch
16 people. What's going on with this?
I don't know. Let's talk about the show here. So Star Crash. And Star Crash is that spoof. I'm sorry. It's a ripoff, not really a spoof.
I don't even think that you can call it a ripoff. It's as if Wish.com got you Star Wars.
Yeah. You ordered the Star Wars A New Hope from Wish.com.
Star Crash.
So I'm not going to go through the whole movie, but I did take a few notes. But you can watch it for free on Tubi for yourself. It's got David Hasselhoff in it. It's got
Christopher Plummer
and a smattering of other people. I had no idea who they were. So what I thought was funny was a lot of the ships, they do a lot of kit bashing where they make models, make ships rather, of various models that exist in the real world to make a spaceship. They did that on Star Wars and other movies. Well, this one, it's like, the Space Station of Love on MST3K, where you can tell it's plastic pieces.
Well, you can see the strings. They do that on purpose.
Well, I didn't see the strings. I'm talking about the plastic.
Yeah.
So you can totally tell those are plastic pieces on this. And the models were terrible. Very terrible.
You're supposed to, when you use things like hamburger boxes from the drive-thru, you're supposed to paint them.
Right. Yeah, it was pretty obvious. Then, of course, at the beginning, there's a police chase. Here's a quote. They're getting chased, and they're getting ready to go into hyperspace. Let's hope this star buggy holds together. I'm like, wow, that's a big ripoff.
Star buggy.
Well, hope this bucket of bolts holds together.
Well, you said it was on MST3K. I'm going to watch it that way.
It's on Netflix on MST3K.
Okay, so it was one of these, what do they call it? The
Return.
The Palooza.
The second one was The Gauntlet.
The Gauntlet. Okay, so it was the first set. Okay.
So it reminded me a lot of, it looked like old Doctor Who or something.
I may have seen this and just blocked it out.
Yeah. Here you go. Here's another quote. So this soldier comes up to the head bad guy and he says, "They found one damn survivor." It's like, what? Damn survivor? Wow. Here's another quote. The lady that stars in the whole film, she gets, they get caught. They're put in this terrible work environment where she's got to work off her sentence.
Yeah.
And she's in a bikini looking outfit, right? And they're dumping radium into this vessel to power the ship, and they're dumping it in there. And she goes, "This radiation will burn my skin off." I was like, "Well, put some damn clothes on." She's in a bikini. And what's funny about her outfit is it changes for no reason. So she's got this black top and bottom, and they had like these like a stripes that was attached to it over her abdomen. And then later on, I'm like, wait, those stripes are gone. It's just the bottom and the top. And then later on, she has this leather collar attached to the bikini top. I'm like, why were they making her outfit as the movie was going on?
It was edited in three different parts.
Yeah. And they had red horses.
That was the stuff we filmed in January. The stuff with the stripes was from July. And there was some issues between then with the costume person.
Another quote. This is funny because, you know, sometimes in movies they reuse audio.
Yeah.
So they capture her on the ship. She was trying to get away. They capture her. And she says, take your hands off me. Let me go. And then they go into the next room. You hear the same words, but it sounds like it did just a second ago. It's not like, you know, it's like they reused the audio. Take your hands off me. Let me go. Exactly the same.
It's a glitch in the Matrix. She was ahead of her time.
Yeah. Now she ends up, the other smuggler that she was friends with, he ends up with powers and like
you seem to have watched a lot of this for being a really bad movie that you couldn't watch.
I watched the whole thing.
Oh,
so here's the last part. Which
so this
I
is your
clean.
New favorite terrible movie?
Yeah, just about. So here you go. Here's the last one. This is how bad the writing was. So her friend Ankton was dying. And he says, no, leave me. I'll stay. I can't go any further. And David Hasselhoff has been introduced about 20 minutes earlier, his character. And so she's talking to Ankton, her friend. David Hasselhoff's standing right there. She goes, you're the only human-like friend I've ever had. And then you see David Hasselhoff go, like, make this gesture with his face like, oh, what am I?
What am I, chopped liver? Yeah.
The only human-like friend. Anyway, I'll let that go. It was funny to watch. So, yes, I enjoyed it from that aspect, but it was
okay.
Terrible.
If you go in expecting bad, then you're not disappointed.
Hey, they're on a snow planet. There's mountains.
And she's
and they show the clouds are going by, but the clouds are superimposed over the tops of the mountains. You know, it should have been behind it.
They're
or something.
Closer.
No, it's not the way it looked.
It just looks like cotton wads moving in front of the camera.
Anyway,
it
was fun in the sense that it was stupid, which I think what was the point of the article that we read about it. So
yes,
there you go.
All right. I watched one that was a little more serious. It really? Takes place just before, right at the beginning of World War II, where the Japanese are starting to make their way down towards Australia. It's called Faraway Downs. It's about this English lady who finds herself in economic distress, and she joins her husband, who is a cattle rancher down in Australia, just outside of Darwin. And unfortunately, on her way, he gets killed. So there's a mystery about that. There's this whole story about the cattle struggle. Hugh Jackman and Nicole Kidman are the two main actors in here. So really good acting. Hugh plays a cattle drover, not driver, drover, name Drover.
Drover.
His name is Drover. And there's this little boy who's of mixed Aborigine and white blood.
Right.
Yeah. So there's racism going on. It's a tough watch in certain spots.
Okay.
But it's also very insightful because the little boy's grandfather, whom they name King George, is, you know, sort of watching over the cliffside, keeping an eye on his grandson. The whole thing. It's kind of fun to watch and good ending too. And of course, there is a villain. So wouldn't be any fun if you didn't have the bad guy. So
good course.
Drama. Only six episodes on Hulu. So Faraway Downs. Good show.
All right. So my wife and I are watching, I think it's the latest season of MasterChef.
Yes.
I enjoy watching MasterChef. I like food, of course, and I like seeing some of the things that they make, especially when they're given free reign to make something or given certain ingredients to make something as a challenge. But yeah, we like Gordon Ramsay, and we're watching this last season. I think it's the last season.
I'd rather watch Gordon Ramsay make stuff than have him watch other people make stuff, because he's always yelling at him. And I
know
that gets tiring. I get exhausted when he's yelling at people. It's like, I don't want to watch
this.
Well,
they do too. Yeah.
Yeah. I have not watched a whole lot of Gordon Ramsay lately. He's gotten too negative.
Well, you should go check out his YouTube channel, because he posts videos about cooking things all the time.
And I did like him getting literally fried on hot ones when he was on there.
Oh yeah. Right. Yeah. Go check out his YouTube channel. There's been a few times I'm like, he says, I'm going to show you how to make, it was searing steaks or something and how to do it perfect. I was like, okay, watch it. Things like that. He'll post up there. So yeah, you should check his, since you watch a lot of YouTube.
So the third one I've got is a short one. It is a YouTube video called Texas Instruments Made a Computer. Parentheses, and it failed.
It wasn't the TI-99.
Yes, it 4A, was. It was the TI-99-4A. And it sure had every reason to succeed, except. So I'm not going to ruin it, but they do a great history. This is like listening to Jonathan Strickland do his corporate historical pieces on tech stuff. They go back to the origins of TI and how they got into semiconductors, because originally they were not. They did, what was it, like geo instrumentation something or other, and they worked with the military a lot. So interesting history. So go check out Texas Instruments Made a Computer.
Texas Instruments has a really rich history, not just talking about this computer, but yeah.
I liked the part about when they were rebranding from whatever it was, GSI, and they said, we need a new name. So they went in a room and they came back with General Instruments. And they said, no, because there's already a company called General Instrument. Go back in that room and think up something else. And they thought,
let's put an S on it.
No. Let's see. We started in Texas. Let's go with that. Texas Instruments. They're not really, you know, they probably paid a whole bunch of people a whole engineers. Lot of money to come up with this this name change going.
It was a bunch of engineers.
I don't think it was. I think by this time they were mature enough to have really high paid executives and marketing firms. But anyway, now, good story about TI.
I didn't have one. I had a friend that had the TI-99-4A.
The first one with the crappy chiclet keys or the one with the regular keyboard?
I can't remember. It was his computer, not mine.
So probably the regular keyboard is what I remember.
I think the regular keyboard was okay. But at any rate, I thought it was not a bad computer.
It was a bad computer.
Yeah, it was fine. It's just it just didn't have the support and name behind it like you would, you know, a Commodore or something like that.
Well, Commodore came out and slashed them at the knees is what happened. They kept reducing the price of the VIC-20. Originally the 99-4A was like $1,200, and then they brought it down to $600, and then the VIC-20 came out at, what was it, $300, and they went, we got to compete. So they really cut into their margins and went, we're at $300. And then it just kept going down and down and down until finally the VIC-20 came out at $99, and they said, we can't do that. We're already at $150 and can't move. So they were really taken out by competition.
Yeah. Well,
all's fair.
It happens. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So you want to burn through these real quick?
Yeah. A couple in the Geek Library. There's
speaking of old computers,
wonderful young lady. She just started a YouTube channel. Her name's Carrie. She's over in London. I think she's somewhere in England. And her latest episode, this isn't even her latest. Her latest episode was fixing a Sega game cartridge that had a cracked PCB. She's got three whole videos, and she's up to about 15,000 subscribers. I watched two of the three now, and I'm going to go watch the third. And this one is coding games like it's the 1980s. Now, back in the 1980s, you coded your games usually out of a magazine. Yep. Or you pirated them for your friends. Well, the magazine said, programs in this book are compatible with Atari and Apple and TI and whatever else. But it's got certain areas where you go, okay, if you're using this machine, you do this set of peaks and pokes and whatnot. She said these magazines are available online. So if you go through our link over at episode 738 at chuckchat.com/technorama. You can find a link to that, and her show, her video will have links to the Usborne computer programming book.
Usborne
starts with a U.
Yeah,
and you can find some of these. So, and many of them are just text based. Like enter it. The one that she did was the it was some sort of lunar lander. But the graphics in these magazines, they look like comic books. The artistry is really well done. There's a story, even if it's only like 20 lines of basic code. They have about 10 lines worth of storyline. You are the captain aboard this ship, and you have to land your ship. And it's basically a high-low game where you go 50. It goes too high. And you have 10 guesses to get the number right.
What I liked about her video, well, one, it highlights she was talking about how much fun it was to find these programs, and they had it broken out where it's a little different for each program, each computer, do basic, slightly different, and how you can type them in and get it right for your computer. Yeah. I remember I did a lot of typing in programs from Computes Gazette and programs like that for the Commodore. And lots of times, I don't know if it was me or the program, because I copied verbatim in there, and it was, there's a syntax error or something. Yep. I had to go find it and fix it. But that was fun when they always posted those. I love typing them in.
We had
now. Hey Chuck, if somebody said here, type this in and see if it works, would you be like, not again?
Copy and paste, more like it.
Yeah, just give me the USB drive.
She was using a Sinclair ZX, which was fascinating to see. I've never seen anybody actually use one of these things. And instead of typing print, there was almost like a function key that you hit this button and the L key, and it puts in the keyword print for you. Oh. So there was a faster way of doing coding on this particular one, as long as you knew what those hotkeys were. I'm sure it was really clumsy at first, hunting around going, let go. Oh, it's over there. It's on the B key or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping they put some mnemonic to it, like P was for print and L was for let, but I didn't see that closely. Thought that was fascinating because I've never seen one of these in action.
I do love her little setup here.
Yeah.
Looking at the video behind her.
Yeah, she got a 3D printer.
She's got a 3D printer, some shelving, some old little tiny TVs in the background.
She's got a top, an above cam, so you can look down on the magazine she's looking at.
Here's one of my favorite things is she's got a tape recorder, a Radio Shack tape recorder.
Yep. Right to load the app.
Yeah, to load it up. That's awesome.
You were talking about syntax errors before. I remember my brother gave me a book called Apple Pascal Games. Well, Apple IIe didn't have a Pascal interpreter on it. I remember sticking a Z80 card in it. But our university had theirs hooked up and you could boot into UCSD Pascal. And I typed these things letter for letter and it wouldn't work. It would just say, error on this line. I said, I'm calling shenanigans on this book. A few years later, I was using Turbo Pascal on an IBM. So it's not Apple Pascal. It should be called Turbo Pascal Games. And it worked fine. I think I was playing Snake.
You're right. Yeah.
That was awesome. The frustrating part. And, I still got that years later when you'd go to download something. Just download the source and compile it with GCC. And it's looking for some header file. You're going, I don't want to go on an adventure game to get your stupid thing working.
I got a side quest. Go find a library. Yeah.
And it wasn't like you could just find the answer on Reddit back then either. It was if it didn't work like the first time or I couldn't fix it immediately, I usually gave up on those things going, yeah, it's nice. You can Emacs for you. All right. Couple more. We've got a video in here about a guy on YouTube who goes through and shows us his Star Wars house and collection tour.
It's pretty amazing.
Joe Fiore needs to watch this if he hasn't already. This was made, I think, around Christmas because his Christmas tree is up. Either that or he's really bad at decorating.
Oh,
yeah. He's so busy decorating his room.
We'll just leave it up.
He just added some things. All I got to say is this guy's got some serious cash in his house.
I know.
He's got things signed by Harrison Ford and Carrie Fisher and authentic props from movies. Some things are replicas. Some things are...
Christopher Lloyd and yeah,
amazing stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a hoverboard.
He says, okay, that's the Star Wars room. Now I'm going to take you over to my other room, which is a walk-in closet with shelves. And he's got Back to the Future stuff mixed in with, you know, Gizmo Marvel. From Gremlins mixed in with Marvel. There's a Infinity Gauntlet on the floor.
Oh,
yeah, and it's organized. Don't get me wrong. It's not in total disarray.
Oh, there's the idol that Indy was going after.
All I can see is Mel Brooks. I don't know. Doesn't that look like Yoda? I mean, that grimace that the idol has on its face?
Yeah, it does.
Yogurt. Okay.
Yeah. And it's got the cup of Christ right beside it.
Yep. There's a couple more videos that I've got in here in the Geek Library. I'm not going to go through them all, but it's not as extensive a list. I had a very light week because of what we'll be talking about in the Patreon show. We're going to give you a part two to what we were talking about last week. Our question of the week before we go for you is, what is something that you think shouldn't exist?
Please do not say Technorama.
Can we wish things out of existence? Or is this things that exist that you really don't believe?
What's something that you think should not exist?
It's like it's impossible to exist. Can we name some political figures?
Let's don't get too political. Don't do that. I don't want it. Just
you mean
some,
like the coelacanth? You mean the ancient fish from the deep?
I mean, don't go like Hitler.
Dinosaurs?
Dinosaurs. I don't know. Have fun with it.
Well, they don't exist today, but they did.
Yeah.
Fundamentalists? Oh, wait.
What? Oh, boy.
Here we go.
Take the different questions.
All right. Let's get out of here on that note before we get all some right. hate mail. And look at that. 17 people watching, and not all of them. Only two are making comments. I'm not sure what's going on here. I'm claiming bots. But I'll take them.
No, 18.
Great day.
We're going viral.
It's going to just keep going up.
Yeah.
19, 20, 21. It's the end of the show. This is usually where people give up and go home. But if you want to get in touch with us, you can call. We still have a good old phone line that sends us voicemail, 707-530-2428. If you're watching at home, Craig's going to put that on the bottom of the screen. Or send us email at chuckchat.com. You should hear that music. And that'll be a cue to put something purple on the screen. There you go. Done. 707-530-CHAT. Thank you, everybody, for watching along with us. Hope you come back next week and bring a friend. Make it 36. That'll be even more fun. Till then, give them a binary high five, Craig.
All right. 101.